In a series titled People Jesus Met, started with this series, and this will be the last one, at least for the time being, until I get stuck with the next series and I can't quite think of what to do. We might jump back into it again. This is a go back to series that I do from time to time. We're thinking about some pretty well-known passages in the Bible, and we're teasing out what Jesus' encounter with a particular person or a particular group of people. We're teasing that out so that we try and understand, well, what does that mean to us? This is a moment in history. Here we are today in our moment of history. What does Jesus' encounter with those people mean to us? So today we're thinking about another person that Jesus met, and he doesn't have a name. He's just the leper, or a leper. Now Luke chapter 3 verse 23 says that Jesus was about 30 years old when he began his public ministry. And in 30 years of age, when a person turned 30 years of age, that was the age of adulthood. Now in my day it was 21, when quickly sort of shortly after that it became 18. So 18 in our thinking, in our culture, is when we become an adult according to our society. But back then it was 30 years of age. We don't know if Jesus packed his bags on his 30th birthday and headed off into the ministry that he was on earth to do. We don't know that that's the case. Bang, he's sort of leaving home, as some people do. Bang, this is the day that I'm leaving home, or whether sort of just transpired a little bit. It doesn't tell us how that happened. But certainly, as an adult, Jesus had the freedom and he had the responsibility to be about his Father's business, to do what he was on earth to do. And he wandered the countryside, and it says, drawing large crowds, he performed miracles, he taught about life and faith. And in chapter 5 of Matthew, we find Jesus in Galilee, and the crowds were so big that he went up on a hill, and people gathered around. They obviously heard of his reputation, and they wanted to be there, large crowds of people. He went up on the hill to teach, and he gave what we know as the Sermon on the Mount. So that's Matthew chapters 5, chapter 6, and chapter 7. And at the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew chapter 8, verse 1, it says, when Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. So at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, large crowds were gathered and listened to him. Large crowds are following wherever he's going next as he moves along and he moves away, and it's walking pace to go from town to town. As he moves away, large crowds are still following him. And those large crowds are made up of all sorts of people. And according to the experts, it is highly likely that Matthew himself, the writer of the Gospel of Matthew, was part of the crowd. And the experts suggest it's highly likely that Matthew was in the crowd listening to the Sermon on the Mount, and perhaps even at that stage he'd already been called by Jesus and was following Jesus at that stage. Now let's try and understand the crowd. When we think about biblical times, we think about the towns and the little villages that are mentioned. You know, a little town, it might have had 100 people, maybe at the most, 100 people living in the town. It's tiny. But when we think about large crowds that are following Jesus, is it the 100 people that's a large crowd because it's the whole town? Well, it's more than that. Matthew chapter 14, verse 21, we've got the story of the feeding of the 5,000. It says the number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. So the conservative estimate is that there was about 10,000 people who were at that event. 5,000 men get mentioned, plus women, plus children, and a conservative number is, let's double the 5,000, we end up with 10,000. That is a lot of people. That is a massive amount of people in those biblical days. 10,000 people maybe sitting at the Sermon on the Mount, and there's 10,000 people maybe, we don't know, some of them probably went home, but a large group of people are following Jesus in the places that he goes. And Mark chapter 3 verse 10, it says Jesus had healed many, so that those with diseases were pushing forward to touch him. So we've got a crowd, and people are pushing forward to try and touch Jesus and try and get a blessing, try and get healed from whatever it was. Jesus did it for them, he can do it for me. And they're pushing and they're surging. And this is a massive crowd of people, and it's a bit chaotic. It's a bit unruly. There's no order here. There's not Jesus is here and the crowd is meekly and mildly following along. It's Jesus here and the crowd surrounding him trying to get what Jesus had done for somebody else. And in Matthew chapter 13, verse 2, it says, such large crowds gathered around him that he got in a boat and sat in it while all the people stood on the shore. And as he backed up to the lake, and the crowd was surging and pushing and touching and screaming and wanting a blessing, Jesus was a bit in fear of his life, I think. And he backed back and he'd got into a boat and he pushed the boat out into the water so that he could sit in the water and talk to this large crowd. They're pushing, they're shoving, they're trying to get close to Jesus, they're calling out. In some of the other stories that we had, they're loudly yelling, they're hoping to be noticed by Jesus. And some are desperate that Jesus might heal them and give a chance in life. So let's read the passage for today, just that little introduction as we try and picture what's happening here. So Matthew chapter 8, verses 1 to 4. Large crowds followed Jesus as he came down the mountainside. Suddenly a man with leprosy approached him and knelt before him. "Lord," the man said, "if you are willing, you can heal me and make me clean." Jesus reached out and touched him. "I am willing," he said. "Be healed." And instantly the leprosy disappeared. Then Jesus said to him, "Don't tell anyone about this. Instead, go to the priest and let him examine you. Take along the offering required in the law of Moses for those who've been healed of leprosy. This will be a public testimony that you have been cleansed." Suddenly a man with leprosy approached Jesus. Now, we're not really sure in the Bible what the leprosy is, because lots of times we hear of a person with leprosy, people with lepers, 10 lepers, we know that story as well. So leprosy was a common thing, but the experts today are not quite sure what it was that was talking about as leprosy in the Bible. What we do know is it isn't the leprosy that the leprosy mission is on about. That's called Hansen's disease. And we have in our minds, I guess, the leprosy that's really disfiguring and disabling. As I understand it, in very, very layman's terms, very layman's terms because I've forgotten what it is. But the extremities lose their feeling. And there's no feeling in the fingers and the toes, maybe the nose or the ears. And what happens for these people, and we see disfigured people, is because they can't feel anything, they can put their hand in the fire and they don't know they're burning. And they can have very disastrous effects. Or they might cut themselves and they don't know they've done it and gets infected. So this disfiguring Hansen's disease could have been part of what was mentioned in the Bible as leprosy. But we read in 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 27, it says Naaman's leprosy had symptoms of turning the skin white as snow. And that's not a symptom of Hansen's disease. That's something else. So in the Bible, the word leprosy, the experts suggest it probably covers a wide range of disfiguring skin diseases. Even something as simple as maybe a boil. So this boil appears on a person's body. They don't know what it is. They don't have all the thousands of years of medical expertise that we have. So what is it? They called it leprosy, probably. An infected wound, they might have thought, was leprosy. Ringworm might have been leprosy. Anything. All of those things are no big deal to us today. But in those days, we've got to remember, no antibiotics, no ointments. There's no real treatment for these things. And those diseases could get badly out of hand. So in 2023, if we've got ringworm, we go to the doctor, get some ointment put on it, and Bob's your uncle. We're fixed. Diagnosed with ringworm or something like that, or eczema. Eczema could have fitted the category as well. People here probably got eczema. That could have been diagnosed or could be mentioned as you've got leprosy if you're living in Bible days. So in 2023, it's hard to think that an infection leads to death. You cut yourself, you get infected, and it could lead to death. I read somewhere along the way over the years that more people died in World War I from infected wounds than being shot dead. Don't ask me who mentioned that or where it comes from, but I'd read that somewhere along the way. Because there was no antibiotics back in World War I. And people did get wounded from the battles and all sorts of stuff, got infected, and they died from the infection rather than the severity of the gunshot wound or whatever it was that that caused the situation. So in biblical days, what do you do when someone has an infectious disease? You isolate them. Because what they've got, you could catch and you could die. So you isolate them. Still happens today. How smart are people from, and this is not just 2,000 years ago from the New Testament, this is 3,000 years ago from the Old Testament. If someone's got skin disease, you isolate them from the rest of the community. Today we have the infectious diseases ward in our hospitals, and they're locked up pretty tight, so the people that are in there, we know it's infectious, we don't want it spreading anywhere else. They go into a particular ward so that it doesn't spread anywhere else. Well, the way they did it in Bible days was, you had to leave. If you've got leprosy, you have to leave. Let's think about this. If you've got eczema, you have to leave. You have to leave your family. You have to leave your town. You have to go and live somewhere apart from everybody else. Usually those suffering with leprosy, they would gather together in their own little community outside of town somewhere. They just survived the best way that they could. They would often beg. Maybe they'd hope that their family members would bring some food and they'd leave it somewhere strategic, somewhere convenient, and then the lepers would come out and get it and they could eat something. And that even that wasn't a certainty, because if the male had the leprosy, well, the females, the workers, the ones earning money, they probably had nothing anyway. So the male lepers were in a bit of trouble. Maybe the males could keep walking and working and bring something for the females who were in that community. So leprosy was potentially a terrible physical condition that could kill, but maybe even worse, the emotional trauma of being sent away from your family and from your community, that would have been just as bad, if not worse. No government support, they just had to fend for themselves. And to make the isolation even worse, if a leper was discovered in the community, they wanted to come into town and they wanted to sit on the street corner and beg. If they came into that town, if they came into that community, people would shout out, "Unclean! Unclean! Unclean! Leper!" And the people would scatter, because you don't want to catch it. What an awful existence. What a horrible existence. Matthew chapter 8 says, in this huge crowd of people, maybe thousands, maybe 10,000, we don't quite know, but it's a large crowd. They're all desperate to get a look at the great man. They're pushing, they're shoving, they're shouting, they're trying to get Jesus' attention. They're trying to touch him, they're trying to get a blessing. And in the middle of all of this, in verse 2, suddenly a man with leprosy approached Jesus and he knelt before him. And I love this bit. I just love this bit. The leper comes to Jesus and he kneels before him. The leper is in a desperate, desperate, desperate situation. He was desperate to be healed. That's just a given. He'd be desperate to be healed. I'm sure the leper was miserable, just his life situation. There was probably nothing good about it. And I'm sure that every single person sitting here today, we would understand if the leper had jumped on Jesus. He's finally got through the crowd and he grabs him around the legs and he begs and grovels and cries and he's trying to convince Jesus, "Heal me, heal me, heal me, heal me." But that was not his first response. And I love it. As he came face to face with the Lord, he realized that this moment was not about him. This moment was not about leprosy. It was not about healing. It was not about justice. It was not about his family. This moment was a meeting with the Lord. And in humility and in an attitude of worship, he falls to his knees. The foundation of faith is not about what God can do for me. The foundation of our faith, the very thing that underpins everything that our faith is, the foundation of our faith is not about what God can do for me. The foundation of our faith is that God is God. And the leper comes to Jesus and he falls at his feet in this understanding that he's come face to face with the Lord of the universe. There is a God who is bigger and better than me. There is a God who created and sustains the universe, a holy God, a God of goodness and justice and mercy, and he's perfect in all of those things. According to Isaiah 55 verse 9, this is a God whose ways are higher than my ways. As good as we think we are, as intelligent as we think we are, as brilliant as we think we are, and sometimes we are in all those things, in the various aspects of our lives. As good as we are, God is so much better than that. As intelligent as we are, God is so much more intelligent than we are. As good as we are at working with our hands, God is so much better. He just creates a universe just by saying it. God's ways and God's thoughts are way bigger and better than ours. So much so that in Isaiah 55 verse 9, trying to describe it, Isaiah says, as far as the heavens are from the earth, so much higher are God's ways and so much higher are God's thoughts than ours. In Exodus chapter 3, God speaks to Moses through the burning bush. And Moses says, "Who are you?" That's interesting, isn't it? Bush has got flames, I'm assuming, coming up. The bush is burning and it's not diminishing at all. It's sort of still burning and the bush is still there and a voice comes out from the bush. Moses says, "Who are you?" And God says, "I am who I am." Now, that little phrase, "I am who I am," that became God's name in the Old Testament. Yahweh comes out of that little phrase. We won't go into all of that. But God had a name, Yahweh. We've heard that, we understand that. Old Testament, talking about Yahweh. Now, I do not think that is God's name. You can strike me down a little bit later on if this is getting a bit heretical or something like that, but I do not think that is God's name. I don't think that God introduced himself to Moses. He said, "Nice to meet you, Moses. My name is I am who I am." This is what I think. When God said, "I am who I am," he was saying, "You know who I am. The whole world knows who I am. I don't need to introduce myself or justify myself or seek your approval about who I might or might not be or who I should or shouldn't be. I am who I am." And I think the leper recognized this. I think the leper recognized in Jesus, here is a man, maybe in his own limited understanding, here is a man who is worthy of worship. And the leper put aside his illness, he put aside his family heartbreak, he put aside his future, he put aside the desperate need to be healed, and he kneeled at the feet of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the maker of the universe and the lover of his soul. And you've got to love that. You've got to love that because the leper got it right. Before any of his circumstances, before any of his needs, before anything else in the whole universe, he humbled himself before the Lord because he is worthy. And in that moment, the leper recognized what all the creatures of the universe of the heavens know. Revelation 4:8. Day after day and night after night, they keep on saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty, the one who always was, who is, and is still to come." Can you picture that in your mind? The creatures of heaven, God is there, and day after day and night after night, they keep on saying, this never stops. As the creatures of heaven recognize who God is and understand who God is, they live in the presence of God, and all they can do is worship Him. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty, the one who always was, who is, and is still to come. And in verse 11, they continue to say, "You are worthy, O Lord our God, to receive glory and honor and power. For you created everything, and it's for your pleasure that they exist and were created." Just an understanding from the creatures in heaven who face to face with God know far more than we do. And the worship never stops. And out of the leper's worship, out of his worship firstly and foremostly, he asks Jesus for healing. And Jesus touched him. Jesus touched the leper. No one touches a leper. The leper had not been touched for years. His wife hadn't touched him. His kids haven't touched him. His friends haven't touched him. He's craved hugs from his kids for years. He's craved passionate embraces from his wife for years. Nothing. No one touches a leper. He was an outcast. He was unclean. He was less than a nobody in that culture. And some would have believed in that culture he was just getting what he deserved. Obviously, God's punishing him for some sin in his life. But to Jesus, the leper was a person worthy of the attention of the Son of God. He was a person worthy of love. He was a person worthy of healing. He was a person worthy of a life. And Jesus touched him and changed his world. And if you're breathing today, you are living the same humanity as the leper. You walk the same earth, you breathe the same air, you are living the same life, it just looks a little bit different now than it did then. You are living the same life as the leper. And life never runs smoothly. For one reason or another, life never runs smoothly. There's some pretty good patches, but then bang, you get hit with something. You have another good patch, bang, something else hits you. For one reason or another. And like the leper, we can have health issues. We can have relationship issues. We can have emotional issues. We can be struggling financially. We can be lonely. We can be fearful. We can be exhausted. We can be some of those things at the same time. We can be all of those things at the same time. We can be all of those things, and we can more than that at different times in our lives. But a touch from Jesus can transform your life. A touch from Jesus can transform your life. The leper had an illness that Jesus healed. And all the issues, all the struggles of his life were about to be lifted. And in our common humanity, if Jesus can do that for the leper, then surely he can do it for us, can't he? Surely. Is there some part of your life, as you sit here this morning, as you, for the last little while since we started our worship time, as you've come into the presence of God and you've put aside all the distractions and all the things that occupy your thoughts and whatever's going on in your life at the minute, as you've come into this building this morning, is there some part of your life that Jesus needs to touch? Do you have an illness that's holding you back? Have you got relationship struggles? Are you fearful for your future? in the stress of the 21st century? Is it weighing you down? Has some sin got a hold on you? Is there something in your life that Jesus needs to heal? The leper could have done the safe thing. The leper could have done actually the right thing in his culture. He could have stood up on the hill and he could have wished with all of his heart that his life was different. He could have just stood up on the hill and accepted his fate. He could have stood up on the hill doing the right thing, keeping away from everybody. He could have stood up on the hill and just accepted that he will die one day with ever having a normal life. But he didn't. He plucked up the courage. He walked towards Jesus, knowing that only Jesus could solve his problem. Folks, where are we today? Where are you in your life today? Is there something that as you've come into the building today and as we've opened God's Word and we've sung worship songs to Jesus, as we shared communion, remembered all the things that he's done for us, is there something in your life that Jesus wants to touch? We're going to sing a song just as we finish off the service. Mark, can we change that last song? Can we do the communion song that we did? Just do it again. Just to help us, just put our minds into the presence of God. And if during that song you were feeling that, as we sat here today, there is something that I need prayer for, I just need a touch from Jesus, I'm going to invite you just to come forward just while that song's being sung, just to come forward and to allow the healing team to come and pray over you. It might not necessarily be a physical healing. It just might be something that you need right now that's holding you back. Could be anything. And I reckon the Holy Spirit's revealed it to you this morning as we've sat here. So don't do the safe thing. Do the courageous thing. Allow somebody to lay hands on you and pray for you that Jesus' touch might release you from whatever that is. So if the band could come up and Mark could come up, we're going to sing that song again. I think it'll just help us just to focus our thoughts again. If we can do that, and as it's being played, I'm going to ask Michael and other members of the team, maybe just come and sit up the front. Don't do the safe thing. Do what the Holy Spirit's asking you to do. Thanks.